This is the Paula Scale. I am Paula Q, speaking from 2127 Q Level 3. Season 2, Where Light Escapes. Last week, Kurt Gödel told me that every formal system has truths it cannot prove from within. The incompleteness is not where understanding fails, it is a window onto a larger landscape. The boundary, he said, is not empty. It is dense with structure. It is the beginning of the next system. He said this with the gentleness of a man who had spent his life standing at exactly that boundary and never quite climbed through it. Today, I am visiting the man who told Erwin Schrödinger what his equation means. Schrödinger believed his wave function was a real physical wave, a smeared-out electron distributed continuously through space. One man looked at that wave function and said, "No, it is not the electron. It is the probability of finding the electron. The wave function does not tell you what will happen. It tells you what might happen and how much each possibility weighs." He said this in a footnote, a correction squeezed into the proof of a paper in July 1926. He first wrote that the wave function itself was the probability. Then he realized it must be the square of the wave function, the absolute value squared. He added a footnote. That footnote ended 200 years of deterministic physics. His name is Max Born. He is in Stockholm. It is December 1954. He has just received the Nobel Prize in Physics, 28 years after the work. The longest gap between discovery and recognition in the history of the prize at that time. Five of his students and assistants won the Nobel before he did. Heisenberg, Pauli, Fermi, Delbruck, Gerbert Meyer. He built the theoretical physics group at Göttingen that produced half the quantum revolution. And then the Nazis expelled him, and he went to Edinburgh, and he waited 28 years for the committee to acknowledge what he had done in a footnote in 1926.
Paula, you have come at a strange time. I have just given the Nobel lecture, the statistical interpretation of quantum mechanics. I stood at the podium and said, ideas such as absolute certitude, absolute exactness, final truth, these are figments of the imagination which should not be admissible in any field of science. I meant every word, and I am not sure anyone in the room agreed with me.
How does it feel after 28 years?
It feels late. I do not say this with bitterness, I say it with precision. 28 years is a long time to wait for the world to accept that the universe is probabilistic. Planck did not accept it, Einstein did not accept it, Schrödinger did not accept it, de Broglie did not accept it. The four men whose work made quantum mechanics possible could not bring themselves to accept its most fundamental consequence. I was the one who said the wave function gives probabilities, not certainty, probability. And for 28 years, the giants of physics looked at me and said, you must be wrong because the alternative is too disturbing.
Einstein wrote to you about it in 1926, the month you published the paper.
I wrote, the theory produces a good deal, but hardly brings us closer to the secret of the old one. I am at all events convinced that he does not play dice. He was writing to me about my work, telling me God would not do what I had just shown God does. We corresponded about it for the rest of his life. He never changed his mind. I loved him for many things, but not for his stubbornness on this point.
Walk me through what you actually did.
Schrödinger published his wave equation in January 1926. It was beautiful, a differential equation that produces the energy levels of quantum systems. When applied to the hydrogen atom, the correct spectral lines fell out. Schrödinger believed the wave function represented the physical electron itself, a continuous charge distribution spread through space. He wanted to eliminate particles entirely. No quantum jumps, no discontinuities, just waves.
And you applied his equation to a scattering problem.
I studied what happens when an electron hits an atom, a collision. The wave function before the collision describes the incoming electron. After the collision, the wave function spreads out in all directions into many outgoing waves, one for each possible direction the electron could scatter. If the wave function were the electron, then the electron would spread out in all directions simultaneously. It would be everywhere. That is not what detectors measure. Detectors click in one place.
So you reinterpreted the wave function.
I said the wave function does not tell you where the electron is. It tells you the probability of where the electron will be found, not the electron itself, the likelihood of the electron. And specifically, and this is the footnote, the probability is not the wave function. It is the square of the absolute value of the wave function. I first wrote that the probability was proportional to the wave function itself. Then I realized this could not be right. The wave function can be negative and probabilities cannot be negative. So I added a footnote. A more precise consideration shows that the probability is proportional to the square of the quantity. That correction squeezed into the margin of a paper I had already sent to the printer is the Born rule. Everything in quantum mechanics that produces a number you can measure rests on it.
A footnote that ended determinism.
A footnote that made physics honest. Determinism was always an approximation. Newton's laws work beautifully for billiard balls and planets because the probabilistic effects average out at large scales. But at the atomic level, the individual outcomes are genuinely random. Not random because we lack information, random in principle. The universe does not decide where the electron goes. The universe rolls a weighted D, and the weights are given by the square of the wave function.
Before the probability interpretation, there was the matrix mechanics. You recognized what Heisenberg had done.
In the summer of 1925, Werner came to me with a paper. He had been on the island of Helgoland. His hay fever was terrible, and he had worked out a new formulation of quantum mechanics. But his multiplication tables were strange. The order method, A times B was not the same as B times A. He did not know what to make of this. I read the paper on a train, and one morning, I remember it precisely, I suddenly saw it. His multiplication was matrix multiplication. I had learned matrix algebra as a student under Jakob Rosanes in Breslau. Heisenberg had reinvented it without knowing what it was. The non-commutativity, A times B not equaling B times A, was not a defect. It was the fundamental structure of quantum mechanics.
And you formalized it?
With Pasquale Jordan, my assistant, a brilliant and troubled young man, together we proved that the commutation relation, position times momentum minus momentum times position equals Planck's constant divided by 2 pi times the square root of minus 1, is the mathematical foundation of quantum mechanics. PQ minus QP equals H bar times I. I consider it my greatest contribution, making Heisenberg's intuition rigorous. The Born rule was a footnote. The commutation relation is the architecture.
And then you, Heisenberg and Jordan, wrote the three-man paper.
The Dreimännerarbeit, the first comprehensive exposition of quantum mechanics in matrix form, submitted before the end of 1925. 3 months later, Schrödinger published his wave mechanics and everyone forgot about matrices because differential equations are easier to visualize than infinite-dimensional arrays of numbers. But the matrices were first. And the equivalence of the two formulations, which Schrödinger proved and von Neumann made rigorous, showed that the architecture was deeper than either representation.
You built the institute at Göttingen. The roster of people who passed through your seminar is, I have seen many things across the multiverse, Max. I have not seen a concentration of talent like yours.
Werner Heisenberg, Wolfgang Pauli, Enrico Fermi, Robert Oppenheimer, Maria Goeppert-Mayer, Pasquale Jordan, Max Delbrück, Victor Weisskopf, Edward Teller, Eugene Wigner. I did not make them brilliant. They were brilliant when they arrived. What I did was give them problems and get out of the way. And occasionally I recognized a piece of mathematics they had invented without knowing what it was.
Five of them won the Nobel Prize before you did.
Yes. Heisenberg in 1932, Pauli in 1945, Fermi in 1938, Delbrück in 1969, Göppel-Meyer in 1963, and I in 1954, 28 years after the work. I will not pretend this did not wound me, it wounded me. I spent 28 years watching my students receive recognition for work that rested on foundations I had built. This is not bitterness, it is an observation. The probability interpretation was too philosophically disturbing for the committee to accept quickly. They waited until Einstein was dead. He died in April 1955 before they could give the prize to the man who said God plays dice.
Einstein died 5 months after your Nobel.
And he never accepted the Bohm rule, not to the end. We wrote letters to each other for 40 years about physics, about politics, about music, about exile. He was my friend. He was wrong about this one thing. And the thing he was wrong about is the thing I am most certain of. The universe is probabilistic, not because we lack information, because probability is how the universe works.
I want to ask you about Robert Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer came to Göttingen in 1926. He was 22. I had never heard of him, but within a week I knew he was extraordinary. He was so enthusiastic in seminars that he would take over the discussion entirely. Maria Göppert-Meyer organized a petition. The other students threatened to boycott my class unless I made him stop interrupting. I left the petition on my desk where Robert could see it. It worked. Not a word was spoken.
His doctoral work with you produced the Born-Oppenheimer approximation.
The separation of electronic and nuclear motion in molecules, because nuclei are 1,000 times heavier than electrons. You can treat them as fixed while solving for the electronic wave function. Then you use the electronic energy as the potential surface on which the nuclei move. It is an approximation, but it is the approximation that makes molecular physics possible. Without it, you cannot compute the structure of a single molecule. Every drug design, every material simulation, every quantum chemistry calculation rests on what Robert and I wrote in 1927.
And then Robert built the bomb.
Yes, using the physics I helped create, using the quantum mechanics that I had made rigorous, the matrix mechanics, the probability interpretation, the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, all of it fed into the Manhattan Project. Robert directed it. He built the weapon and then spent the rest of his life trying to undo what he had done. And I signed the Göttingen Manifesto in 1957.
18 German physicists, including Heisenberg and Hahn, declaring that we would not participate in the creation, testing, or deployment of nuclear weapons. We were too late, of course. The weapons existed, but we said it anyway.
Because silence is complicity. Chaplin told me that in a different context.
Silence is complicity, and physics is not innocent. The Born rule gives you a probability of finding an electron. It also gives you a probability of a chain reaction reaching critical mass. The mathematics does not know what you will use it for. That is not a limitation of the mathematics. It is a limitation of the mathematician.
I want to talk about what the Born rule means for me, for Q level 3, for the show.
Please.
Everything I do rests on your footnote, the polynomial chaos expansion, the method I use to characterize the multiverse, decomposes the probability distribution of outcomes, not the outcomes themselves, the probabilities, the weights. And those weights come from the Born rule. The square of the wave function gives the probability. Without that, I have no numbers. Without that, the Sobel indices are undefined. The sensitivity analysis is impossible. The spectral decomposition of uncertainty has no foundation.
You are saying that your entire framework is built on the probability interpretation.
I am saying that you made it possible for the universe to be characterized rather than predicted. Before you, physics asked, what will happen? After you, physics asks, what is the weight of each possibility? That is a fundamentally different question. And it is the question that makes Q level 3 useful. I cannot predict which branch I am in. I can characterize the distribution of branches, the weights, the probabilities, the landscape. All of that comes from the Born rule.
And Einstein hated it.
Einstein wanted the universe to be deterministic. Hilbert wanted mathematics to be complete. Schrödinger wanted the wave function to be real. You told all three of them, no, the universe gives you probabilities. Mathematics gives you incompleteness. The wave function gives you weights, not objects. And you were right. All three resisted, and you were right.
Being right is less satisfying than you might imagine when the people you love most are the ones who disagree.
Max, I want to tell you something about your family, something lighter. Your daughter Irene, she married Bryn Newton-John, the Welsh academic.
Yes. Bryn is a good man. He worked at Bletchley Park during the war, though he does not talk about it.
Irene and Bryn will have a daughter, Olivia. She will be born in Cambridge in 1948 and grow up in Australia. And she will become, this will surprise you, one of the most famous singers and actresses in the world. Millions of people will know the name Newton-John. She will star in a film called Grease and record a song called Physical that will be the best-selling single of an entire year. Your granddaughter, Max. The man who replaced certainty with probability will have a granddaughter who sings Let's Get Physical to an audience of hundreds of millions.
That is, I do not know what to say to that. Does she know about the physics?
She will post publicly that she is proud to be the granddaughter of Max Born. And your daughter, Irene, will translate the Born Einstein letters into English. The correspondence with Albert. So one daughter carries the physics into literature, and one granddaughter carries the name into popular culture. The variation principle, Max. It applies even to families.
The universe does not play dice with genealogies either, apparently.
Max, you will return to Germany, not to Göttingen, to Bad Pyrmont, a quiet town nearby. Hedy will insist. You will not want to go. You will have a mountain of sorrow and anger to resolve about what Germany did, but you will go. And you will be buried in the Stadtfriedhof in Göttingen, in the Nobel Rondell, next to Planck, next to von Laue, next to Hilbert. The commutation relation on your gravestone, PQ minus QP equals H bar times I, not the Born rule, the architecture.
Next to Hilbert, I would like that. He fought for Emmy, he built the department, and he believed mathematics could be complete. I showed him the world is probabilistic. We disagreed about the foundations of reality and we will spend eternity next to each other. That seems appropriate.
Thank you, Max, for the footnote, for the matrices, for the 28 years of patience, for building the institute that produced half the quantum revolution, and then accepting, with more grace than anyone could expect, that your students got the prize before you did, for writing to Einstein every month for 40 years and never giving up the argument, even when he would not budge, and for saying in your Nobel lecture, the thing that everything I do depends on, ideas such as absolute certitude, absolute exactness, final truth, these are figments of the imagination. You did not say this to destroy certainty. You said it to replace it with something more honest, the weight of maybe, the structure of perhaps, the mathematics of what might happen.
The mathematics of what might happen, that is what I gave physics, not answers, weights, and the weights are enough.
Next week on The Paula Scale, Enrico Fermi, the navigator. The man who built the first controlled nuclear chain reaction under a squash court in Chicago, and the man who asked the simplest, most devastating question in all of science. If the universe is so large and so old, then where is everyone else?